All right, we're going to start here on Nundalet Amud Aleph, 10 lines down. Tashma. So again, the Gemara here is trying to, whether it's establish or disprove, the thesis that Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda have different positions with regards to Dinei Derabbanan and Dinei Deoraita. Over here, they're actually addressing the issue of Rabbi Meir, that Rabbi Meir, when it comes to a Din Derabbanan, we said before that Rabbi Meir is Kones Shogegatu Mezid Bidderabbanan, and not in Deoraita. Here, the Gemara is going to bring a series of cases where it seems that Rabbi Meir, even in the Derabbanan, is not Koneis, Shogega to Mezid, and challenging that thesis in Rabbi Meir. Tashma, Achal Truma Tmei'a. Individual who eats Truma Tmei'a, Mishalem Chulin Tohrin. He has to pay back Chulin Tohrin. Shilem Chulin Tmei'im. On the other hand, if he pays back with Chulin Tmei'im, Mahu, what would be the din? Amar Sumchus, Mishum Rabbi Meir, Bishogeg, if it was unintentional, Tashlumav, Tashlumim, then his payments work. Bemezid, if he did it intentionally, Ein Tashlumav, Tashlumim, then his payments are meaningless. Bechachamim Omim, Echadze, Vechadze, Tashlumav, Tashlumim, in both cases, whatever he paid works. Bechuzer Mishalim, Chulin Tehorim, and then he has to pay again, Chulin Tehorim. Now, the Gemara in a second is going to amend this whole braita because it doesn't make so much sense based on a question we're going to see. But just as background, when an individual eats truma, then they are culpable to replace that truma. The way that they replace the truma is not through compensation or monetarily. They have to repay by giving produce to the kohen, and that produce will take on the character of truma. It will become Truma when he hands it to the Kohen. So in this Braita, you have a number of things happening, which the Gemara will address, but the first of which is that he ate Truma Tmeya. Truma Tmeya is not available to be eaten, even to the Kohen. Truma Tmeya is either given to the Behema of the Kohen, or it has to be burnt, and you can get Hana from it. But in terms of eating, it can't be eaten. So when he replaces the Truma Tmeya, which will be the problem here, he's giving Chulin Tohorin. When he gives the Chulin Tohorin, then it turns into Truma, so he's giving something much better back to the Kohen. He's giving something that will become Truma, which will be Truma Tehora. That's number one. When he pays back Chulin Tmeim, so then what's going to happen is he's going to give the Chulin Tmeim, and then it's going to turn into Truma and become Truma Tmeya. Or in essence, he's giving back what he ate. So that's going to be the Gemara's question on the Braita. What did he do wrong here? By giving Chulin Tmeim, he just replicated what he had eaten. And now he's just giving that back. But then you have the two opinions here. One is Sumchus in the name of Rabbi Meir, where Bishogeg Tashlumav Tashlumim. Where it seems like when he does it Bishogeg, the payment, the compensation works, and he's done. B'mezid ain't Tashlumav Tashlumim. When he says B'mezid, it doesn't work. There's a question here in the Rishonim as to what does it mean, doesn't work. Then we look at the Chachamim. The Chachamim say in both cases, Tashlumav Tashlumim, whatever he gave turned into Truma, and then he has to pay a second time, which is the Knas Chachamim, that he pays a second time Chulin Tohorin to replace what he gave the first time. So he doesn't get what he gives the first time back. According to the Chachamim, what he paid turned into Truma, and then he makes a subsequent payment of Chulin Tohorin. According to Rashi, this Chulin Tohorin that he pays now remains Chulin. Because whatever he had to do as far as the Truma is concerned, he did already. This Chulin Tohorin is simply a Knas Chachamim that has to pay again Chulin Tohorin. And therefore it remains Chulin. There are others, Rishonim, that disagree and say that even the second payment turns into Truma, just like the first payment. Now going back to Sumchus Amar Rabbi Meir, when he says, B'mezid ein tashlumav tashlumim, the way that Tosafot explains it over here, ein tashlumav tashlumim, Tosafot over here says, means just like the Chachamim. The first payment stays Truma, and then the second payment, he has to make an additional payment. It's not like the first payment doesn't count at all, and he gets that back, and he gives the second payment. When it says here, ain't tashlumav tashlumim, there we do not say that it's nothing. No, the first payment goes through, and like the Chachamim, you have to pay a second payment. Vavinan ba, and here the Gemara says, we asked, or we tried to clarify here. But mezid, amai ain't tashlumav tashlumim. By mezid, why isn't his payment a good payment? Tavo alav bracha. He should get a bracha for what he's doing. He ate something that wasn't ra'oi, truma tmeya. It can't be used even when the kohen is tamei, because when the kohen is tamei, you cannot consume truma, regular truma. Rashi over here claims the ochel truma b'tumat aguf b'mita. That's mita b'day shemaim. Even if the object itself is tumeah, you can see Rabbi Kiva Eger and the Hagot Meronshenberg both question Rashi's position over here because it's pretty explicit in the Gemara that if you have tumat aguf and you eat tumat tumeah, that you're not chayav mita bidei shamayim. But nevertheless, you can't eat it. It's a restriction against eating it. And instead, what he's giving him is chulin tumeim. Chulin tumeim are edible during your time of tumah, and therefore he's giving him back better than he took from him or that he ate from him. So why are you saying that it shouldn't work? Even if he does it intentionally, it still upgraded what he had before. Before he had tumat tumeah, now he has chulin tumeim. The problem with the question, the Gemara and Rashi already notes this, is that once he gives him the chulin tumeim, it turns into truma tumeah. So in the end, he gave him back exactly what he took. He's not giving him back better. And so then why tavo alav bracha? So Rashi claims over here, it's in the wide line in Rashi, the first wide line in Rashi, he says, v'afagav desof sof ein asin truma. In the end, they all turn into truma. Lo chazule. It's still not good for him. Tahat tumeahi. Miu chulin tumein mikavin lishlume. He intended to give chulin tumeim. V'lo yodo dehem nasim truma. And he doesn't know that they turn into truma. And this isn't something that's found in the Torah. It's a limud of Torah Shebaal Peh, that the compensation that you make for truma that you ate, that you took from the Kohen, turns into truma. And so he doesn't know that. So he thinks when he's giving the chulin tumeim that he's doing something good. Even though he's giving back something tamei, nevertheless he thinks it's going to remain chulin tumeim. And this individual, when he gives it, thinks he's upgrading. He ate truma tumeah, now he's giving back chulin tumeim. He's doing a favor to the Kohen. He's doing something good. So why would you penalize the individual when he does it b'mezid? Even if he does it b'mezid, it seemingly is, even in that situation, an upgrade. And as Rashi says here, he doesn't know it's going to turn into truma, and therefore he hasn't done anything bad. Now, even if he did know, the truth is that he's not doing anything worse than he took. So in either case, why doesn't it work by mezid? So there are those that want to explain why it's based on, there's a sheet that brought in Tosafot, not here, but in other places in Shas, Tosafot brings that the mezid and shogeg here are not about the intentions of the payor. Here we're saying that it's the one who's paying, paid the mezid, or he paid the shogeg, that he paid the item. And that's what's causing the problem. The revolt in Tosafot and other places in Shas says the explanation of the mezid and the shogeg over here is the one who ate it. Did he eat the truma b'mezid, or did he eat the truma b'shogeg? If he eats the truma b'mezid, then he becomes what's known as a mazik. He's not subject to the return policy of eating truma. Then he becomes like a regular mazik or gazlan, and his payments are deemed not to be truma anymore. They're only deemed to be regular payments or compensation. On the other hand, if he eats b'shogeg, he eats unintentionally, then his payments turn into truma. And so what the mezid and shogeg are telling you over here is that if he did it b'mezid, and since it does not now turn from chulin tmeim into trumat tmeah, tavo alav bracha, then he deserves a bracha. He's giving chulin tmeim, literally, that remain chulin tmeim. Tosafot in Yevamot rejects that explanation. And Tosafot over here simply says that before he gives the chulin tmeim to become a trumat tmeah, it has more value. And therefore, tavo alav bracha.
Ella, you have to say, va'amar Rava, va'amar ila kadi. So Rava says, Vamri la Kadi, and some say Kadi said it. There are two ways to explain Kadi over here. Either Kadi is the name of an Amora, or Rashi brings in other places Kadi means without attribution. Kasure Mechsera. The Braita that we quoted is missing some words here. There is some introduction that you needed. V'halchei Kani, and this is what it should say. The emendation should read as follows. Achal Trumat Me'ah, Mishaleim Koldu. For each Trumat Me'ah, he pays anything back, because Trumat Me'ah is worthless, or Kimat worthless. So whatever he gives back is fine because he's giving back no worse than he took. Achal truma tohora. The other hand, if he eats truma tohora, mishaleim chulin tohorim, then he has to replace it with chulin tohorim. Shileim chulin tmeim mahu. Here he's downgrading, meaning that he ate truma tohora and he has to replace it with chulin tohorim that will turn into truma tohora. That's the proper way to pay. Now, if he gives chulin tmeim, what is the din over here? Sumchus omer mishum Rabbi Meir b'shogeg tashlumav tashlumim. When he does it b'shogeg, the payment is good. B'mezid ain't tashlumav tashlumim. When he does it intentionally, then the tashlumim don't work. Chamim rami echad zeh v'chad zeh tashlumav tashlumim. In either case, whatever he paid so far, the chulin tmein turns into truma tmeya. Chuser mishalem chulin torim. And then he has to pay again because he didn't repay him what he had taken from him. He took truma torah and he's giving him back truma tmeya. So now, in terms of the chiddush in the Braita now, the biggest chiddush in the Braita is that peshugeg, according to Rabbi Meir, tashumab tashlumim, that it actually works. Why should it work? You have chulin tmeim, and now he ends up with trumat tmeya. You're not giving him back what you took from him. You took trumat ora. Trumat ora is fine for him to eat and has value. If you're handing back chulin tmeim, it's going to turn into trumat tmeya, which is worthless to him. Why is that considered to be compensation? Why does that work at all? So Rashi tells you over here, it's based on the Gemara in Pesachim. He says, that when you replace that which is there, you have to pay al pi amida, according to the volume that you took, but not according to the value that you took. Even though the stuff that he's getting back is worth less and not as good, from what he ate, nevertheless, midoraita, these are considered to be compensation. All the Torah demands is you give back the same quantity of produce or food that you ate, you replace. Doesn't question the value of that. Now here you can see Tosafot already questions Rashi. He says, because even according to the one who says lefi mida mishalim, even the one who says that you pay back based on quantity, he still says, lo miftar alim ken yishalim shehu shavim. You still have to give back, value-wise, what you took. Meaning that the person who says, lefi demida mishalem, also requires that the value be the same. So it's right, you can give back trumat meah. But if you give back trumat meah, you have to give enough trumat meah that it equals the trumat Torah that you ate. I mean, there's a huge value differential, you have to give a ton more. Other Rishonim say, the problem with Rashi is that this is a machloket in the Gemara Pesachim. There's one daya that says the feed me the mishalim, and the other one that says the feed damim mishalim. The fact that you have a machloket about it, why is Rashi saying that we're only going according to the version that it's the feed me the mishalim? What happened to the one who says the feed damim mishalim? And therefore, they don't see this as being an answer to the question of why bishogeg it works, not giving back that which he stole. So Tosafot believes that you have to give back quantitatively the value that you stole. And therefore, if he gave Trumat Tmeah, he would have to give as much Trumat Tmeah as equivalent to the Trumat Teorah. And so for that reason, Tosafot doesn't see the fact that by Shogeg, it is Tashlumim as a Chiddush, because in Ochanami, you gave back the value. Why not? The real question for Tosafot is, why B'mezid is it ain't Tashlumav Tashlumim? And that's based on what Tosafot says at the end here. Mikomakom B'mezid ain't Tashlumav Tashlumim. So even though they're equivalent in value, the mezid, we penalize him because he ate something that was easily liquidated, easily sold into the market, and you give him back something, even though you're giving him a larger quantity that's worth the same amount, but it's something that's much harder to sell, much more difficult to deal with. And that's why we penalize him in that case. And here we want you to give him the exact same item so that he can utilize it the same way he utilized it before. So that's the way Tosafot deals with the problem here of Shogeg and Mezid. By Mezid, ain't Tashlumav Tashlumim, because he hasn't made up the value that he took, because he's giving back something different than what he ate. And now the Gemara says, V'amar Rav Acha Brei Dervika, Hocha B'kansu Shogeg Atu Mezid Ika Benayu. So now Rav Acha Brei Dervika causes the problem here, because he explains the machloket between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim as to whether we're Konei Shogeg Atu Mezid. And you could have read the machloket here as being different or fundamental within the din of truma, and said that that's their machloket over here. Rav Acha comes and says there's no fundamental machloket here. It's simply a question if we are koneis shogeg atu mezid. That means that Rabbi Meir in this instance is not koneis shogeg atu mezid, whereas the chachamim are. And here clearly we're talking about a knas chachamim. Rabbi Meir sabar lo kansu shogeg atu mezid, but chachamim omrim kansu. It's obvious that that is what he's saying or suggesting that the setup is, and that the knas is that even after you've paid, you have to pay again. And since you have to pay again, that's called a knas. And so once you have to pay a knas, then we're talking about a knas chachamim. And here Rabbi Meir says we're not koneis shogeg atu mezid, going against the thesis we had before, that Rabbi Meir in Dinei Derabanan makes it that you're koneis both shogeg and mezid. Where it says, hachi ashto. How do you compare the cases? Hotam gavre lishlume kamikavein. over there, the person wants to make payment, wants to make restitution. Ana niko melikanze, we're going to come and make a kanas. So as Rashi says over here, aval mitamei umidameya shogeg, person who's mitamei someone else's property, or mixes them up, bishogeg, enu mitasek bitova. He's not doing anything good. Over here, when the person's trying to make compensation, he makes a mistake in the way that he compensates, or how he compensates. But he's trying to do the right thing, which is compensate to pay back for what he did wrong. So there, you're willing to say that maybe we should not be koneis the shogeg to mezid, because here's a person with the right intentions. In the case of mitamei and midameya, over there, what good intentions could this person have? Man, even if it happens with shogeg, he's not involved in anything that is good. He's not trying to do anything that would bring any good or any result that is beneficial. The fact that maybe he did it by accident or he didn't know, okay, so he maybe can't be held culpable. But that doesn't mean that he's engaged in an activity that we'd want him to be engaged in anyway. And that's why Rabbi Meir over there is going to penalize Shogeg Atu Mezid. Whereas over here, he's not going to penalize Shogeg Atu Mezid. And then this is going to become a refrain basically throughout all the questions that we're going to ask here, which is that each of these cases, it's different because the intentions of the individual are positive. Where their intentions are positive, we're less likely or there's less necessity to penalize him, Shogeg Atu Mezid. Versus our case, where the person's doing nothing good, then there's a reason to be kone shogeg atu mezid, because we want this person staying away from this completely, not getting engaged unintentionally with this activity. So tashma, next case, dam shinitma, vizarko bishogeg, so the dam became tamei, and then they were zoreked bishogeg. Hurtza, it works. Bimezid, lo hurtza. Intentionally, it does not work. This braita, which is brought all over Shas, is talking about the tzitz miratzeh, that the tzitz of the Kohen Gadol is miratzeh on tuman, the migdash. One of the items that would be miratzeh on is dam shinitma, dam that became tomei. So technically, midol raita, the tzitz should take care of this, and if you sprinkle the dam on the mizbeach, whether unintentionally or intentionally, the tzitz should take care of that, and the korban should be fine. And even the Kohanim should be able to eat the basar. What the Braita says over here is that there's an imposition midrabanan. The dam shenitma bezarko b'shogeg, hurtza. That works, because it was b'shogeg. Dam is tamei, and unintentionally you put it on the mizbeach. We let the din d'oraita stand, which is that the korban is good and the Kohanim can eat the basar. B'mezid, on the other hand, if he knows the dam is tamei, and he's putting it on the mizbeach, lo hurtza. Then it doesn't work. Mid Rabbanan. The Rabbanan say that the basar cannot be eaten by the Kohanim because he shouldn't have done this. The Korban goes through and the Balim and Itchaper, but there's a knas on the Kohanim that they cannot eat the basar over here because they're the ones at fault here. The Kohen is putting it on his back, Mizid, and he's the one at fault, and therefore the penalty is that they cannot eat the basar, and this is clearly a itzura dirabanan, because midoraita, the tzitz would be meretzeh and take care of this, and they should be able to eat the basar. The Gemara here is asking on Rabbi Meir, how does the Gemara know that it is Rabbi Meir? There's nothing here that indicates that this is authored by Rabbi Meir. So how are they asking a question on Rabbi Meir from something that has no attribution to Rabbi Meir? Rashi says over here, ein ochanami. The Gemara could have answered that this is Rabbi Huda and not Rabbi Meir, and that's why they're not koneis shogeg atu mezid. It's not a stam mishnah. Upcoming, we're going to see a bonus of stam mishnayot, and that's why Tosafot tells us the Gemara asked on Rabbi Meir, because stam mishnah Rabbi Meir, and therefore they're challenging him from stam mishnayot. That makes sense. But Rashi points out this is a stam braita. It's a stam braita. Why does that mean that it's Rabbi Meir? We don't have that principle in a stam braita that the attribution goes to Rabbi Meir. And therefore, Rashi over here says, you could have answered it's Rabbi Huda. Nevertheless, the Gemara wants to answer it even according to Rabbi Meir, so that Rabbi Meir could be the author of this braita, not that he has to be the author of this braita. Other Rishonim think that there are other Mishnayot, not this braita, but other Mishnayot to talk about the tzitz being meratzeh, that or stam mishnayot, and that would have attribution to Rabbi Meir. They brought the braita, because the braita is the clearest in defining shogeg, mezid, and what the problem is here. So they brought the braita, even though there are mishnayot that say this, because the braita was the easiest to understand. And that's why they think it's Rabbi Meir over here. And they're going to give the same answer they did before, which is, Hachiashta. How can you compare the cases? Hatam gavar lechupure kamikavein. Over here, again, the person who's sprinkling the dam wants to be mechaper. He wants it to work. And therefore, he's trying to do something good. Anonika minikanse. So therefore, we're going to go and penalize him, bishogeg. There aren't reasons to penalize him when he does it bishogeg. Bimezid, it's one thing, because then he's doing it intentionally. He knows it was wrong. So there's a reason to penalize him. So here, even though the meat is not a sur mido, right? That's only a sur mido rabbanan. The rabbanan imposed their position, said, sheva al-tase, don't touch it. Tubar tsuratan, you leave it until it goes bad. And then you burn it. You can't burn it right away, because it's not meat that is, which is not kodeshim or pasul. So you wait tubar tsuratan, and then it goes out to the beit ha-sreifa because of that. The chachamim are able to impose, b'sheva al-tase, that you don't do anything with this meat. But here, b'mezid, there's a reason to be kones. B'shugeg, when the person is trying to do the right thing, there's no reason to add on an additional penalty. On the other hand, by the case of mitamei, like we said before, the guy's not involved in anything good. Nothing good comes from doing this, whether it's unintentional or intentional, and therefore there's reason to be kones, to stay away from this whatsoever. All right, tashma, mishnah in truma, amaser b'shabbat b'shugeg, yochal b'mezid lo yochal. So here we're talking about taking off Trumot and Masrot on Shabbat. In Beitzah, the Gemara discusses the problem, which is, it's a problem that looks like Metakein Kli. The same is true of this, and the next Mishnah that we're going to quote, which is about going to the Mikveh, putting something into the Mikveh on Shabbat, making a Kli from being Tamei to Tahor, is like Tikkun Kli on Shabbat. And same with the Maaser, because you're taking something that otherwise was not usable, and making it usable on Shabbat. It was once Tamei, now you make it Tahor, makes it usable. It was tevel, now you're making it edible by separating it out to trumot and masrot. Those look like tikkun. They look like you're fixing on Shabbat. And therefore they are sur midrabanan on Shabbat. That's what the Gemara in Beitzah tells us. So now the Gemara is going to quote these two Mishnayot, which are Stam Mishnayot. And therefore the question is on Rabbi Meir, because it's a Stam Mishnah, Rabbi Meir. Why is this different than the position of Rabbi Meir? Tosafot just notes that the Gemara here quotes the Mishnah out of order. The order of the Mishnah was the opposite, and they bring the second case before the first case, which he says, I don't know why. But either way, the Gemara brings down this Mishnah. Maser b'shabbat b'shogeg yochal. If it was done unintentionally, you can eat it. Mezid, if it was done intentionally, lo yochal. So again, here, it looks like there's no knas shogega to mezid, even though we're dealing with a din derabonon. Achi ashto, again, how can you compare the cases? Atam gavar l'tune kamikavein. So analikum lekanse, we're going to put a knas on someone who's trying to do the right thing. Again, over here, the person's involved in a constructive action. That constructive action is taking off Trumot and Masrot. In the case of Mitamei, Midameya, he's doing nothing good, and therefore, there's reason to keep him away from this completely, and be kones, shogega to mezid. Tashma, again, the other part of that Mishnah, matbil kelim b'shabbat b'shogeg, someone puts him into the mikveh on Shabbat b'shogeg, yishtamesh ben, then he can use them. B'mezid, if he does it intentionally, lo yishtamesh ben. Again, the Gemara answers the same way. Achi ashto. How can you compare the cases? Hatam gavar l'ture mane kamikavein. Then again, he's involved in something constructive. He's trying to be mitaher the kevlim. Ano linkum l'kanse. Then we're going to go ahead and be konesim in that situation. It doesn't make sense. So what Rabbi Meir answers in all these cases is, yes, I am kones shogega to mezid. I do penalize in dinei derabanan shogega to mezid when the activity the person's involved with is an activity that he shouldn't be involved with. It's not constructive in any way. It's something that we would want to deter people from getting engaged in. Therefore, there's reason to be penalizing shogega to mezid. In activities that are constructive in general in nature, over there, yes, if he does it intentionally, we're going to penalize him because we don't want him doing this. We don't want him violating the surim derabanan. But then if he doesn't be shogeg, there's a lot more latitude to say, this guy's not trying to do something bad. He's doing the right thing. He's just doing it at the wrong time or the wrong place or in the wrong situation. But there's less reason to penalize him. Now the Gemara says, V'rami d'Rabbi Yehuda b'drabanan. Let's see that in Rabbi Yehuda, there's a stira at the level d'Rabbanan. Remember, Rabbi Yehuda says before, we're not koneh shogega to mezid in dinei d'Rabbanan. And over here, the Gemara is going to show you otherwise. The Tanya. Naflu v'nitpatsu. If they fell in and then they were cracked or they were crushed, echad shogeg v'echad mezid lo yalu. Whether it's shogeg or mezid, they do not become batel. Divrei Rabbi Meir, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. This is Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda's position. Rabbi Yossi v'Rabbi Shimon omrim v'shogeg yalu. If it was done unintentionally, then it works. V'mezid who's done intentionally, lo yalum. There it doesn't work. L'chatchila, you're not allowed to be mevatel isur. If it was unintentional, we'll say, okay, what's done is done. B'diavad, it works. But if you intentionally try to be mevatel the isur, there we're not going to let it go through because we know you're only doing it to save your chulin and to avoid the problem of the din of the chachamim that it shouldn't be batel in this case. In this case, dimi d'oraita mina Torah chad betray batel. Everything is batel berov. So already you know now that the Mishnah that they're quoting from Orla is talking about bitul, and what we're talking about here is Orla that fell into another object and the bitul of Orla. Mina Torah, Orla, that falls into another object is Batel Be'rov. On the other hand, the Chachamim instituted that when it comes to Orla, that's only Batel at ratios of 200 to 1. That's number one. Number two is the Chachamim also within the world of Bitul have certain items that are not Batel at all. What those are what are called items that are Chashuv. There are certain items that are so Chashuv, that they are so significant, that even when they fall into another object, they do not become batel. They do not become nullified in the other object because they inherently are so important that you can't say that they are batel. Again, that's an imposition, derabanan. Mina Torah, batel, berov. On the other hand here, this idea that if it's chashuv, it's not batel, then that is a din derabanan. That's what's being spoken about here in the Orla. These are what they're called egozei perach. These are egozim from a certain location or a certain species of egozim that are deemed to be very chashuv. They were so significant and so expensive that even when they fall into another object, they're not batel because of their uniqueness. And so here, when the egozei perach of Orla fall into a mixture of chulin, according to the chachamim, they're not even batel, echad be'alef. Even one in a thousand, it's not batel because they are chashuv. They have standing on their own. That standing makes it that they are not batel. So now what happened here is the egozim fell into the mixture and then the guy breaks up the egozim. He ruins the egozei perach by crushing them. In crushing the egozei perach, they're no longer discernible. You can no longer sell this or have significance embedded in these egozei perach because they're not really there anymore because of the crushing of them. In this case, when it fell into the head there, you want it to be batel. So what does he do? After it falls in, he crushes them on purpose to be mevatel them. He wants to create the bitul so that he doesn't have to worry about this and he won't lose all this chulin. So now the Mishnah is talking about, did he do it b'shogeg or b'mezid? The Rabbi Meir, the Shitato, says, whether it's shogeg or mezid, we're going to penalize him. Here it's a din derabonon, and in a din derabonon, we're going to penalize him echad shogeg v'echad mezid, lo yalu. It doesn't work, divrei Rabbi Meir. This is Rabbi Meir, the Shitato. Here you're not involved in a constructive activity. You're doing something wrong, and if you're doing it wrong, both b'shogeg and mezid, we're going to say, no go. Now Rabbi Yehuda over here agrees with Rabbi Meir in a din derabanan that you're kone shogeg to mezid. Yet we saw before Rabbi Yehuda says when it comes to din derabanan, we are not kone shogeg to mezid. So Gemara says, there the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda's position is shum da'ate li'irume. People are going to come and lie about this. Because over here, it's all about the intent of the individual, which is that here the person's going to go ahead and be mevatel it, and then say, oh, you know what, I did it bishogeg. I didn't do it on purpose, I did it bishogeg, and therefore it's batel. And for us, there's no way to discern whether he did it bishogeg or he did it bimezid. And over here, there's a incentive for him to do it bishogeg and then have it be batel, because he'll save him a lot of money in the mixture. So over here, where there's incentive for him to do the wrong thing, because it'll save him money, and there's a reason for him to say it's shogeg and not mezid, what's going to end up happening is everybody's going to do it bimezid, and then say they did it bishogeg. So in order to avoid that, we say that he penalized both bishogeg and bimezid to avoid that eventuality. Because you can't say that he thinks that every case of shogeg will worry about him lying. Because that's the case, you'd have to be koneis in every situation. We don't see that in Rabbi Yehuda. It's unique to this situation where there's incentive to cheat, to do it b'mezid and then say you did it b'shogeg, because it saves you a ton of money and it's mevatelet. So for that reason, over here, he penalizes to stop people from acting in that manner, acting b'mezid and saying that it is b'shogeg. Now Gemara says, V'rami d'Rabbi Yossi ad Rabbi Yossi. As an aside, there's a steer within Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi over here says the shogeg is fine, mezid is no good, yet Tetnan, we have a case by Kilei HaKerem. If you have a sapling of Orla, meaning its first 3 years, or Shel Kilei HaKerem, that got mixed up with other saplings. You cannot collect, you cannot pick the fruits from here. If he does collect the fruits, then they are batel 1 in 200, which is the standard bitul for the chachamim, which is 200 to 1 with Kilei HaKerem and with Orla. As long as he's not doing this intentionally. Even if he does it intentionally, it works and it's batel 200 to 1. So Rabbi Yossi over here says that even if you are mevatel chatchilo, it works. In the that we brought before, Rabbi Yossi says only if he did it b'shogeg does it work. B'mezid, he agrees that it doesn't work. So how do you reconcile between here where Rabbi Yossi says no matter what you do, it's batel, whereas in the case before, he only said when he did it b'shogeg that it is batel. How do we resolve that? On that we have this qualification or this explanation of Rava. Person does not make his patch or his whole vineyard problematic with one nitiyah. And Rashi says over here, since it's an uncommon case, lo achmur ba rabbanan. Rabbanan were not machmir. Aval nifilat isur beheter shchicha. The case of Isur and Heter getting mixed up, that's your classic cases of Tarovet. That happens all the time. So in cases of Tarovet, the Chachamim were mitakein, that you cannot be mitvatel. Whereas in cases of the Geffen, where that's a very unusual case, who plants a single sapling or vine inside of their vineyard, which is Asur, meaning that it's Kilei HaKerem, or it's Orla, and now he's going to risk his whole vineyard over this one netiyah? Doesn't make so much sense. Chachamim don't have to worry about people like that. People like that are just crazy. And so if that's the case, we don't put in takanot for people who do things like that. And therefore the whole takanat chachamim doesn't exist over here about being oser levatel chatchila. And for that reason, Rabbi Yossi says over here, it's batel whether he does it b'shogeg or mezid. It is batel because the whole institution of the chachamim doesn't exist in this case. Now, how it became Kilei HaKerem, it's simply that the vine was planted along with produce somewhere else. He pulled it out, brought it over here, and planted it into this vineyard. So that's how he got the Kilei HaKerem. And both of those are Asurim both Bachila and Hana'a. So they're a serious level of Isur. Even though they're Batel Barob, meaning they're right to me, the Rabbanan, they say 200 to 1. And over here, in this Din Rabbanan, we let you be Mevatel Lechatchila, according to Rabbi Yossi. Whether Lechatchila lets you do it, but he says, even if you did it intentionally, it works, is because there's no knas chachamim over here. The chachamim don't put in knasot in places where the people do things that are extraordinary or unusual. They put it in for regular people and regular issues. That's where they put knasot in. That's the difference in Rabbi Yossi's opinion between the Braita and the Mishnah. And we have the same corroboration from Eretz Yisrael, which is Rava's in Bavel. When Ravin comes, he says, Rabbi Yochanan in Eretz Yisrael said the same thing about this Mishnah, that the Besorah is that we don't worry about Mezid here because the Chachamim didn't impose a Knas because this is an unusual circumstance. Alright, next Mishnah. Akohanim shepiglu b'migdash mezidim chayavim. If the Kohanim in the Migdash did something b'pigul b'mezid, they are chayav. So again, here, the question comes up, how do you have a case that they're doing a b'mezid or doing a b'shogeg? B'mezid, you understand. B'shogeg, how do you have somebody do something b'shogeg because he thinks he's going to eat it outside of its zman? That's the whole problem. Pigul is that during the avodot of the korban, the kohen thinks about a makshava that he's going to either do one of the avodot or do the eating outside the zman that is allotted, and that becomes pigul. That makshava ruins the korban. Now, many Rishonim believe that it's just a makshava that ruins it. Other Rishonim say that he has to articulate it in order to ruin it. But either way, if he knows it's wrong, then when he says it, he's doing it intentionally. If he doesn't know it's wrong, then what is he doing? Why is he even getting involved in this and thinking this? So that's, again, what you have to say here is, like along the lines of what you're saying here is, ba'omer mutar. Again, that he thinks that it's fine. Meaning that he doesn't think there's anything wrong with what he's doing. And that is the shogeg over here. If he doesn't think it's a korban, then he can't have a machshava psula because he doesn't think it's a korban at all. If he thinks it's a korban, then he knows the time period has been, and you have to say again that it's b'omer mutar. He doesn't know what korban, he doesn't know the laws. But the dam tameh before, you could say possibly he didn't know it was tameh. Over here, you can't say that he doesn't know it's a korban. Right. He knows it's a korban. So here you have to say, b'omer mutar. That's what I mentioned to you yesterday. How do you have the case of Yai Nesek is b'omer mutar. He thinks it's mutar. I mean, that's a very likely scenario where there's dam tameh. He knows that tzitz is meratze on dam tameh. So he thinks you could put the dam tameh on the mizbeach. So it's omer mutar. So that's generally the case when you have these types of situations and you say, how does it happen b'shogeg? It's a case of omer mutar. That's number one. Now again, the Tosafot over here earlier mentioned that the girsa in the Mishnah is simply bezdim chayavim. That's it. And he proved that from our Gemara before. And implicit in that is, b'shogeg, it's mutar. On the other hand, there are Rishonim that have a girsa directly in the Mishnah that b'shogeg mutar. Tarabanan. Aya usei mo b'tarot. Person was working together with another party in tarot. V'amalo, tarot shasiti imcha nitme'u. The tarot that I was working with you are now tamei. Something happened that made them tamei. Aya usei mo b'zvachim. He was working with him with korbanot. V'amalo, zvachim shasiti imcha nitpaglu. The zvachim that I did with you are pigul. Neman, he is believed. Aval. Amar lo tarot shasiti imcha bayom ploni nitme'u. He says, you know the tarot that we worked together last week? They are tamei. Or zvachim shasiti imcha bayom ploni. You know those zvachim that we worked on last week? Nitpaglu. They were pigul. In both those cases, eino naman. He's not believed. They're good. They're fine. Maishna reisha, maishna seifa. What's the difference? Why in one case is he believed and in the other case he's not believed? Amar Abaye, kol should be ado naman. Whatever is in his control, he is believed. How much control here is a good question. Rashi over here says, kol should be ado la'asot b'shah shemodio, that he has the ability to do what he's saying at the time that he tells him. If he has the ability to be metameh the object right now, then he can tell him that it is tameh, because even if he didn't do it, he could do it right now. The fact that he has the ability to do it right now, he's believed. So the fact that he's telling you it's tameh, he's got to be believed because he can do it right now. On the other hand, in the other case, the case where he said last week it happened, he doesn't have the ability to change the circumstances right now. Therefore, over there he's not believed. Rashi says over here, he still physically has them to make it. He's in the middle of bringing the korbanot. He's between the shchita and the zrikat adam. And then he says it was pigul. Or by the tumult, he's still working with this guy on them. So therefore, he is able to make this statement. On the other hand, once he's already past the time, they're already out of his control. He can't do anything. He doesn't have a right to deal with them or to say anything about them. That's the way Rashi learns it. Other Rishonim learn that the difference here is not about whether it's biyado, literally, that he can physically do it now, but that was biyado, and that he had the ability to do it, and that he had enough control to do it. Shebiyado means it was birshuto. It's still in his possession. Not that he now physically can do it, but it's still within his possession. And since it's within his possession, that is sufficient. Rav Amar, could go into Ashkechei v'lo Amar Lei v'lo Midei. He found him, he never said anything. And later on, he finds him, and then he tells him. So here, the problem, what Rava says is, the difference in the cases is when he tells him. That originally, they work together, he meets him a couple of times, never says anything, and then a week later, he comes over and says, you know what? Oh, that stuff was tameh, that stuff was pigul. Over there, we don't believe him, because why didn't he mention it the last three times that he saw the guy? The assumption is he knew the information all along. And he only decides to disclose the information a week later. Why is he waiting to disclose it? If he waits to disclose it, we have questions about his nemanut over here. The other hand, if he discloses it immediately, then he's neman to say, whatever happened, happened. And as Rashi says over here, afo pi shein biyado neman. Even though it's not within his hand anymore, he's neman. Now, what does that mean according to Rava? How far away is Rava from Abaye? That's the question all the Rishonim are dealing with here, because generally, Abaye v'Rava, Alocha k'Rava. And therefore, we want to know, Abaye makes a statement where, what is Rava's relationship to Abaye's statement? And now you can see the first line in the Tosafot here. He says, Hikshu Rabbeinu Tam, Dehocha. Afilu Rava, lo mehemen, el mishum shehaya biyado tchila. Even Rava agrees to Abaye's basic premise that he had to have the ability to do this at some point. So it had to be biyado at some point in order for him to be believed here. It can't simply be that he's coming along and disclosing information, and if he discloses it the first time, fine. If he discloses it later, no. That is not a reason to believe him in one case, not believe him in the other case. The whole thing here is that he was involved with it, and then he's neman if he tells you the first time he meets you, tells the information, he's believed. If he waits to tell you, then it's no. Others say not like the Rabbeinu Tam, that has to be biado, but rather bishuto. It has to be in your possession still. May not have to be biado, maybe you can't do it anymore, but you have to have it in your possession. Mashma, da'atam tarvayu modu, barmalei erechad. So then, Tosfot goes to your question, which is, what about erechad ne'man bi'isurim? And how come over here we don't say erechad ne'man bi'isurim, and then we're done? Why does it matter? Ne'man, not ne'man. He's an erechad. Erechad is ne'man bi'isurim. And that's it. We're done. Everything should be ne'man in all these cases. Why are we worried about it? It's the first time, last time. Shouldn't matter. So Tosfot over here goes through long Tosfot dealing with when is an erechad ne'man bi'isurim. He says that erechad is only ne'man bi'isurim where the balim remain silent. Where the balim do not reject that which the erechad is saying. The erechad comes and testifies and the balim say, no, you're wrong. Then the balim have a right to dissent against the erechad, and we will not believe the erechad. Regarding himself, it becomes a chaticha shel isura. The erechad will believe vis-a-vis himself, and therefore he can't eat these items or he can't deal with these items. But vis-a-vis the balim, he doesn't have a right to override the balim rejecting what the erechad is saying. And therefore the erechad is ne'man bi'isurim when the balim remains silent. Tosfot differentiates between whether the balim know or don't know. Which is that the balim's silence in the face of an erechad ne'man bi'isurim is only if the balim could know the information. And therefore their silence is shtika kohoda. And therefore they agree with the erechad. If the balim couldn't have known, then their shtika is not a shtika because they don't know. And therefore their silence is not admission to the erechad ne'man bi'isurim. Whereas if the balim specifically state otherwise, then you don't have an erechad ne'man bi'isurim. Omer Rabbeinu Tam, the hocha b'machash yisho. Over here, it's either where the balim disagree with him, or Omer, ini yodea. Or he does, says, I don't know. And in both those cases, that's not good enough. Erechad is only ne'man bi'isurim, where the balim acquiesce to the statement of the erechad, of ahotam, the shotei kabik hoda. The case in Kiddushim, where he's silent, that is hoda'ah. Tokach Omer Rabbeinu Tam. The adam mitayer yayin lechaveiro, someone who's taking care of wine for his friend. Iashkechei v'amarlei b'zimna kamaita mehemen. If the first time he bumps into him, he tells him that it was problematic, he's believed. Kirova. Vafilo machisho. Even if he denies it, the balim say no. Because, given shayabi ado. Because that, he had the ability to do it in that case. Avalacher lo mehemen, imachisho umer in yodea, vishatik mehemen. But if it's someone else, who is an outsider, who didn't have a biado, who couldn't have ruined it, and the balim reject them, they are not believed. V'chein pasach Rabbeinu Meshulam ben Rabbeinu Kulunimus, ve'im emen abalei kebetrei asur. In a case where he's believed like two people, then the balim have no right to reject that statement of the individual. What the Rabbeinu Tam is trying to do is to neutralize the problem of erechad ne'man bi'isurim. Erechad ne'man bi'isurim, first of all, is either in a case where the balim are shotek kehoda'a, where they admit it by their silence, or in a case where the erechad has full control, biyado lasot, he has the ability to do it. And that's what Rabbi Yonatan says over here. The erechad is believed right away when he tells him, because biyado lasot. Then the balim don't have a right to reject it, because this guy has enough control where if he says something, we believe him. And that's why believed in the case where he says it right away, not believed in a later case.
Whereas if you look at the Tosafot read on Daf Nun Hey Amud Aleph, the Tosafot read explicitly says that he disagrees with the Tosafot, and he says, V'ein lefaresh, v'hala shotek, that case in Kiddushin where the Balim are silent, that's because shtika kehoda'a, but rather the reason that they have to be shotek over there is just that they don't disagree with the aid, because if they disagree with the aid, it'd be one versus one. But otherwise, the Tosafot read says, Eid echad ne'eman bisurim. That is a principle, whether it's lahatir, or whether it's le'esor, eid echad is ne'man bi'isurim. So then, why, in this case, do we not believe the eid echad? He says, because he's no ge'a badavar. Over here, we're talking about a po'el, mipnei shayahu po'el badavar. He is working here. Ushmirat ha-tarot taita mutalalav. And it's his obligation to take care of the tarot. Mipnei ze natan lo scharam. That's why he's paying him to do this. She'aseh b'tara. Ukshomer lo ki tarot she'asiti imcha t'intimeti. And then when he goes ahead and says that they're problematic, nirekuhu meisim atzmo rasha. It's as if he is incriminating himself. Shelo asah pulatav shehayitah mutalat alav. He's not doing what he was obligated to do, lasoto be'emunah, in a trustworthy manner, and to do what he was hired to do. And therefore we don't believe him anymore, because of his nigiyot by this, and the fact that he is incriminating himself by doing this. But enoch hanami, if it was an acher, a third party that came and told us this information,
we would believe them. And then we have the machloket, the Vayin Rova, as to whether, even in that circumstances, the Poel believed, according to Abaye, as long as it's biado lasot, and according to Rova, as long as he tells him, bepam rishona, we believe him, but afterwards he loses his nemanut, because he was a Poel, and he was supposed to do this, he can't come back and incriminate himself after he's already left the job. The Ramban notes over here that there is a difference in your obligation to disclose information. That is, that if you are working on this, and then you don't disclose the information right away, then your nemanut drops. Because you should have said something to the Baalim right away. The fact that you didn't say something already brings question to your nemanut. On the other hand, if you are an Ed Echad Stam, who has no interest here, or is not an interested party, then we may not, in that case, say that whether you said it the first time or the next time matters. Because you don't have any obligation to say something, and therefore, it's when you remember. You forgot the first time, then you remember later, and you tell him, that's fine. But if you worked on it, and you're obligated to disclose the information, the fact that you didn't disclose it up front is very problematic. And that's where you lose your nemanut. What is considered to be the first time is a good question. Most Rishonim mean the first time after he leaves the job. That's the time that he should have said it. There are some Rishonim who even say that when he's leaving the job, that's considered to be the first time. The other Rishonim who don't say that is because he's too scared there to lose his payment. So he wants to get paid, and then he tells it the first time. So over there, we don't say the fact that he didn't disclose the information is meaningful because he didn't disclose the information because he wanted to get paid. After he's paid, then the first time he meets him, he should have said something. The fact that he didn't say something is what loses him his nemanut. So that is a machlok amongst the Rishonim, what's considered to be the first time after he's finished the work. Ha'ud amar lei lichavrei. Tarot shasiti mcha b'yom ploni nitmi'u. That the tarot that I did for you on such and such a day became tamei. Ata the kamei de Rabbi Ami, they came for Rabbi Ami, amar lei, shurat adin enu ne'eman. Midzad adin is not believed over here. Amar lefanav Rabbi Asi. Rabbi says to him, Rabbi, atau merkein, you really say this? Hachi amar Rabbi Yochanan, mishum Rabbi Yossi. This is what Rabbi Yochanan says the name Rabbi Yossi. Maaseh shatorah he'emanto. That the Torah believes in Eid Echad in these cases, and why should he not be ne'eman? Heichan emanato. Where is it that the Torah says that an Eid Echad is ne'eman in these cases to ruin something? Am Rabbi Yisrael Barbisna, Kohen Gadol, b'yom ha'kippurim yochiach. The Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippur will prove this. Again, this is not explicit in the Torah, but from the case of the Kohen Gadol, it becomes obvious that he's alone and he's Neman, which is the Chi Amar Pigol. If the Kohen Gadol is working on Yom HaKippurim, comes back and says, you know what? The Korban Oath that I did inside, that I was sprinkling the Dam inside the Kodesh, or inside the Kodesh HaKodeshim, they're Pigol, Mehemin. He's believed. Umunaya Dinan. How do we know that he did it Pigol? How do we know that he made a Pigol? Vaktiv. Chol Dam Lo Yebo Omoed. Nobody's allowed to be in the Eichal when the Kohen Gadol is working inside. That means he's alone. So when he comes out and tells us he made a pigol, we're believing him that he made a pigol. Elah mishum de Mehemen, it must be because he is believed. The Dilma, the Shamanei, the Pagyo. Maybe we heard him make it into pigol. This goes along with those Rishonim that believe that pigol is not enough to have machshava. You actually have to articulate the pigol, at least with regards to other people's korbanot. Ilav de Mehemen, Afagav de Shamanei, Lami lo Mehemen. Says, even if he's not, if he didn't have the trustworthiness, even if we heard him saying that he's making a pigol, we still couldn't make it into pigol. Because Dilma de Bater Ochi Kamar. Who says he said that? Or he did the pigol before he did the sprinkling of the dam? Maybe he did it afterwards. We have no idea when in the process he said this. If he did it before, then it ruins the korban. If he did it afterwards, it doesn't ruin the korban. So the only way, again, that we know that he did it at the time that it was problematic is because he tells us he did it at that time. So he is Mammon. So Mar says, Achigamar. No, maybe, Dilma de Chazine bepishpish. He saw him through the little entranceway. Rashi over here says that these are the small doors that are in the Beit Chalifot that allow you to peer into the Eichal. And so you can look through those doors and see him in the Eichal, even though you weren't there. The reason that the Gemara here mentions the pishpish is because they're talking about looking into the Eichal, into the Kodesh. But had they wanted to say that they were looking into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, where he does Lifnai V'Lifnim, then they would have said the Lul, and they would have mentioned it. And in Elchanami, that's the case. Other Rishonim say from the beginning, the Pishpesh is that Lul behind the Kodesh HaKodeshim, and that's what they are looking into. Tosafot points out over here that the problem with this is that Rabbi Yossi himself, in the Gemara in Zvachim, says that there's no such thing as Pigol Lifnai V'Lifnim. It has to be like a Shlamim. and the shlamim is only done b'chutz, and therefore there's no pigol bifnim. So then, what is the question here? The Kohen Gadol can't be mefagel the korban anyway. So the answer that Tosfot gives is that even though Rabbi Yossi believes there's no such thing as pigol bifnim, he still says if you have a machshevet pigol, it's posel the korban. It won't make it into pigol that'll be subject to karet then if it's eaten, but it will be pasul and it will ruin the korban. And so the Gemara here is using the word pigol loosely, which is that if he has a machshev pigol, he will make it pasul. And he is believed, the Kohen Gadol, to make it pasul in this instance. Kasha, that is problematic, because based on that, you wouldn't be able to prove from this that you're neman to ruin something. We brought the proof from the Kohen Gadol, but again, the proof from the Kohen Gadol is not foolproof because of the problem that maybe somebody did see him there, and that's what makes it pasul, not the nemanut of the Kohen Gadol. But either way, you see here, the reason that Rabbi Ami says that the Shuret HaDin is that he should not be believed is because he thinks that what right does he have to do this? On the other hand, Rabbi Ami comes back and says that when someone's involved with something, working on something, he's Naaman to tell you that it got ruined. And I prove it from the Kohen Gadol, even though his proof is not such a strong proof. Now, seemingly over here, Rabbi Ami is following the position of Abaye, and Rabbi Yochanan is taking up the position of Rova, and therefore, here Rabbi Ami has Rabbi Asi disagreeing with him, and later on, Rabbi Abou will also disagree with the next case of Rabbi Ami, because it seems that Rabbi Ami subscribes to this position of Abaye instead of Rova. On the other hand, the Tosafot Arid over here says that even Rabbi Ami holds like Rova, and that's because his understanding of Rova, as we mentioned before, is that Rova doesn't agree like the Rabbeinu Tam says that it needs to be biyado lasot originally, but rather it just has to be birshuto. It still has to be in his possession. Since it's birshuto, or he's still engaged in this activity or something associated with it, therefore he has a right to be Naaman in this case. He says, therefore, even Rabbi Ami's position is like Rova, and that means that Rabbi Asi, who brings an alternate position over here, is bringing a third position, which we haven't heard before. It's arguing on both Abaye and Rova. And later on, when Rabbi Ami says that you're not Naaman in the sugya, it is because it's out of his possession. It's not his possession anymore. And Rabbi Abou argues later on is because he sees an overriding factor that the loss of money makes him Naaman, despite the fact that he is a poel over here. How da to the kamei de Rabbi Ami? Amalei sefer Torah shekatavti leploni, askaro shelo lo ketavtim lishman. I wrote a sefer Torah for someone, but the Shemot Hashem that I wrote in the Sefer Torah, I didn't write them L'Shem Hashem for the name. Therefore, the Sefer Torah is Pasul. So Amar Lei Sefer Torah Biadmi. Who has the Sefer Torah right now? Amar Lei Bilad Yokeach. The buyer already has it. Amar Lei Ne'eman Ata Lafsid Scharcha V'yata Ne'eman Lafsid Sefer Torah. We'll believe you that you're going to lose your money here, and you're not going to get paid anymore because you didn't do the Sefer Torah correctly. So you'll be believed as far as that is concerned. But as far as ruining the Sefer Torah, you don't have the right to ruin a Sefer Torah because it's not biyado. It's not in your hands anymore. You've given it over to the lokeach already. Rabbi Yirmiyah, and he defsid schar azkarot, schars the Sefer Torah, kulei mi yifsid. Over here, how much money is he going to lose? He should be paid for the rest of the Sefer Torah. Should just not be paid for the Shemot Hashem. So what do you mean that he's not going to get paid? He is going to get paid. He's just going to lose out a small amount of money. Amalei in shekol Sefer Torah shein askarot shelo k'tuvot lishman and ushave klum. What are you talking about? Once the askarot are no good, then the whole Sefer Torah is pasul. So what are you going to pay him for? You're going to pay him for the rest of the Sefer Torah that is pasul? And if the whole Sefer Torah is pasul, then it doesn't matter that the mistake he made was about a particular item in the Sefer Torah. The fact that the Sefer Torah is no longer good makes it worthless. So that's why he's not going to get paid anything. So Gemara says, Vila aver alayu mikumus. Just take a quill and go over the Shemot v'lekatshe and be mikadesh them. Kiman. Who's that like? Nema delok Rabbi Yehuda. Let's say this is not like Rabbi Yehuda, which we saw earlier in the Masechta, the Tanya. He had to write the Shem Hashem. Instead of thinking that he's going to write the Shem Hashem, he's writing the name Yehuda. And he made a mistake in Yehuda and he left out the Dalit. So he ended up doing the right thing, which is he got the Shem Hashem, but he didn't do it with the intent of writing the Shem Hashem. You can write over with the quill and be mekadeshet divrei Rabbi Yehuda. That's what Rabbi Yehuda's opinion says. Chamim Ormim, in Hashem min ha-muvchar. That's not the proper way to make the Shem Hashem, and you can't do this. So it seems over here that we're passing like the Chachamim who say that you can't fix this Sefer Torah. And since you can't fix the Sefer Torah, he's going to lose all of his money. He's going to lose his payment because he gave him a puzzle Sefer Torah, at least according to his own version of what happened here. And so therefore he's going to lose his money, but he can't make the Sefer Torah pasul because it's no longer b'yado. It's not in his control. It says, afilu tema Rabbi Yehuda. We could even fit this into the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. Ad kan lo kama Rabbi Yehuda ela mechado azkara. Rabbi Yehuda allows you to fix one Shem Hashem in this way. Aval dekule Sefer Torah lo. When it comes to a whole Sefer Torah, we don't let you do this. Mishum de mechsek menumar. It looks like a spotted leopard. When you do one little fixing in the Sefer Torah, so there's like one thing that's out of place. Whether you erased it, you scraped it off, or you ran over the ink, it's going to look different than the other pieces. So that's fine if you do one correction. If you do a whole bunch of these corrections, the Sefer Torah is going to start looking spotty or different all over the place. It's not going to be a nice Sefer Torah anymore. It's not going to be mehudar. And so because of that, you cannot fix it even according to Rabbi Yehuda, which is interesting. It goes back to the discussion back on Daf Chaf Aleph where we discussed this with regards to Hidur Mitzvah. How does Hidur Mitzvah play into the integral mitzvah? Over here, it seems that the Hidur Mitzvah is a part and parcel of the mitzvah to the point where we don't let you do something because of Hidur Mitzvah, and we consider that to be something that would ruin the Torah. We don't let you fix the Shemot Hashem because it's going to ruin the Hidur of the Torah because it'll be Minumar. And the same thing with the Chachamim. Ain't a shame in a mufchar. That's not the way to do it. Seemingly, they are saying that that doesn't work, and you can't fix the shame in that way. So now we have another case. Oh, da to the kamei Rabbi Abau. It's an individual who came before Rabbi Abau. Malay sefer Torah shekatavti the ploni gevilim shelo lo yibatim lishmam. The klaf, I never made the klaf the shame sefer Torah. I did not cure them, tan them to be done for a sefer Torah. Even though there's a machloket about whether you have to tan them lishma. We just saw that machlok between Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim. We paskin like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and even if we don't paskin like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel over there, that's maybe only with tefillin and mezuzot. But for Sefer Torah, for sure, you have to do the ibud lishma, and therefore this is a problem according to everyone. Amalei, Sefer Torah b'yad mi. Who is holding the Sefer Torah? Amalei b'yad lokeach. It's with the buyer. Amalei, mitok shatay ne'man lasid zchacha, tay ne'man lasid Sefer Torah. Since this is to your detriment to tell us this information, you're going to lose all your payment for writing the Sefer Torah. Therefore, you're neman to lose your schar. But you're also migo that you're losing your schar. You're also neman to be posel the Sefer Torah. Because over here, this is going against his personal interest. His personal interest is to say the Sefer Torah is kasher, because then he'll get paid. Here he's coming for Rabbi Abau. Over there was Rabbi Yami. So here there's a machloke about when he loses his schar, is he neman then? According to Rabbi Yami, he's not neman. According to Rabbi Abau, he is neman over here. Alright, so here, since he's gonna lose all of his compensation, he's also believed in regards to the Sefer Torah. The truth is, it doesn't matter who's holding the Sefer Torah now. The question that he asks is, lokeach or mocher? So, what does it matter? Even if it was with the mocher still, he would be Neman. Why did he ask the question? But he shouldn't even point out is that he needed to know that it was a purchase. Because if it's a purchase, then he's losing money. If it was a gift, then he's not losing any money. So we have to be sure that his statement is gonna cause him personal loss in order to believe him. So that's why he was asking him, not to find out where the Sefer Torah is, but rather to find out what type of relationship was the Sefer Torah written under. Was it written under a gift, or was it written as a purchase? And when he says, lokeach, now we know it's a purchase. Umayishnamid Rabbi Ami. Your question, why is this different than Rabbi Ami? Rabbi Ami said before that he's not Naaman. Over here he is Naaman. Amar hatam ikonameyar tayi bidi Rabbi Yirmiya. Because over there you can say he made a mistake with Rabbi Yirmiya. When the Sofer came, he thought that all he's going to lose is the money that he should be paid for this Shemot. So when he came in, he told the truth, thinking that I'm just going to lose a little bit of my compensation, and then I'll ruin the Torah. And therefore, he says, you know what? It's worth doing that. I'm okay to do that. On the other hand, over here, where he's going to lose everything, then he has a migo that he's Neman. And the difference is, how much personal loss is he going to suffer by telling you this information? So if he's going to lose a lot by telling you this information, then he is Naaman because it's going against his own interests. And so if he's willing to go against his own interests and suffer financial loss like this, then he should be Naaman. Naaman both to lose his money, but also Naaman to tell you the Sefer Torah is pasul. On the other hand, if he thinks that there's a small financial loss, then we have to worry about what his real intentions are over here to be posel the Sefer Torah. He's going to think he's going to get paid anyway. And he's just going to lose out some money over the Shemot that he didn't do right. So when he thinks like that, he says, you know what? I can get paid here. and still ruin the Sefer Torah. Whatever reason that he wants to do this, we can't prove from the fact that he's losing money that it's going against his interests, because the money he thinks is a small amount. He makes a mistake in his thought process. Had he known, again, that he would lose everything, then we would say he's Neman, because then he's going against his interests completely. And in that case, he is Neman. But over here, Halcha came to Kamatz and Kuli Agre. Here, he's going to lose all his money, all the compensation for writing the Torah, Vata Vamar, and he told us anyway, Kushta Kamar. He's definitely telling the truth in this case. Okay, we're going to stop over here by the Mishnah on the top of Nunhei Amud Aleph.